The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Good Monday morning, everyone. Welcome into Morning Invest. I'm Clayton Morris. Thank you so much for joining us and supporting independent journalism, covering the stories you likely won't see on the mainstream media. Well, hopefully you had a wonderful weekend. I had enjoyed an extra day off, thanks to my lovely wife for filling in on Friday. We have got a big show for you lined up today. Big question, as the evidence starts to mount, and you wonder, like, why is President Trump just like clinging to this, fighting so hard? You have Chris Christie coming out saying, hey, this is a national embarrassment. Would you please start considering conceding this election? You have Republicans all across the country and governors and senators, Republicans saying, Mr. President, time to pack it in. So why is he clinging to this? Well, maybe it's the other question we should be asking. Will President Trump be facing prison time when he gets out of the White House? We're going to show you the evidence. We're going to talk about this from a number of different angles this morning. Really fascinating stuff. We're also going to talk about Vice President-elect Biden, and he has a mandate, I believe, to improve the lives of workers. He certainly wouldn't have won this election without labor, without unions coming together and trying to convince their low-income worker partners, hey, I know you're not a big fan of the guy, but you better come out and vote because he's going to represent the worker. So he's been saying a number of things about increasing wages, improving the lives of workers. Will he do it? It's up to us to hold this president accountable for that. So we'll go through what this president could do on day one without Mitch McConnell to help the workers. We'll also talk about my theory that it's time now to pay off student loan debt once and for all, 100%, and be done with it. President-elect Biden could do this on day one, the day that he is sworn in. He could eliminate it. Not some piddly $10,000, which I know is being talked about right now. No, the full enchilada, the full Monty. And we're going to tackle the arguments from people that say, yeah, but what about the people that work so hard to pay off their student loans? Shouldn't they get rewarded too? Or should we be rewarding freeloaders? We'll discuss all of that. I paid off my student loans, and I'm not bitter about it. Grover is here with us this morning. He's back. I'm glad to see him after spending a few days away. He is back and asleep after a long run this morning. David is in the booth, in the production booth, keeping it all together, cranking the music for us this morning.
Good morning.
See you, David. Hope you had a wonderful weekend.
I did.
All right. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about our sponsor today. You know, you're looking for something for the holidays, right? You're looking for a gift. I have to tell you, look, you can't see half the family right now, or almost all of the family, extended family, and they want to see you. So this is something that my wife and I did. We went to paintyourlife.com and we were able to set up and get a beautiful canvas of a photo of our family. So all you need is the photo, and within like 10 minutes, you're all set up. And what they do is they have world-class artists that will take your photo and create a portrait of your picture. And you can choose from all different styles, which is super cool. And so I wanted to do like the charcoal one. You can choose like different themes. And I'm going to tell you how you get 20% off right now. So you can do, let's do a parent or child. That's a cool one. You click on that, just click continue. You can choose different styles like charcoal, oil, canvas, and they'll ship you a beautiful big oil canvas. Just by going to paintyourlife.com, you can have an original painting by a world-class artist done by hand from any photo at an affordable price, shipped right to their front door. You want to give your grandparents a truly meaningful gift this holiday season, or your extended family they don't get to see that they will cherish for a lifetime, just go to paintyourlife.com. And guess what? If you want to text to get 20% off, here's how you do this. put this up on the screen. At paintyourlife.com, there's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money is refunded, guaranteed. And right now, at a limited time offer, get 20% off of your painting. That's right, 20% off and free shipping. To get this special offer, text the word INVEST, that's INVEST, to 64,000. 64,000. That's INVEST to 64,000. Text INVEST to 64,000. Paint your life. Celebrate the moments that matter most. So our thanks to Paint Your Life. A really cool idea to do that. So thank you to them. All right, let's dive into the news now, shall we? Let's talk about President Trump on this Monday and what in the world happens to this guy once he no longer has the immunity that he's afforded right now under the White House, under the presidency. Well, what is next for this president? Well, could it be prison time? And prison time specifically for tax fraud. As the evidence begins to get louder and larger and louder and louder from two different avenues right now, two different cases that are unfolding, two different lines of prosecution that are unfolding in the state of New York. So let's just put some context, and I want to go through these different investigations because from a business perspective, this is fascinating. And as someone who studies taxes and who understands real estate and who understands all of these things, and then you who probably cannot relate to this type of avoidance of this type of tax evasion or hiding money or increasing profits in order to get better business loans and then ripping people off or having other people paying for your business failings. Like all of that is so foreign to most of us, right? So how do you then have that and then get elected to the presidency? So could this be on the other side of this presidency for Trump? So Trump, before he became president, remember, he boasted about all of this. He boasted about the idea that he was going to continue to make money off of his businesses, his hotels in Scotland and San Francisco and all over the world, Mar-a-Lago and all these places. That, no, he wasn't going to give that up. Why should he? I'm a businessman. You know, he would take a lesser role in all of it, to be sure, but he was going to continue to profit, which raised all sort of like moral questions, right? And all sorts of political questions. So wait a minute, your hotels are still going to be set up in other parts of the world that you're going to be profiting from. And if, you know, I'm in the country of Qatar or Saudi Arabia and I want to curry favor with the American president, well, should I stay at the Marriott or should I stay at the Trump Hotel? You stay at the Trump Hotel and you spend a lot of money at that Trump Hotel. And then President Trump hears about it. Oh, wow. You mean the prime minister of this and that stayed at my hotel? Nice. All of those questions, you know, we were dealing with at the beginning of the Trump presidency, but he continued to say I was going to, you know, make money off of these hotels, and that's fine. So he never actually removed himself from any of these businesses and when he won the presidency. But now as he leaves office, Trump is facing multiple investigations and lawsuits over those very business interests. And you might say, well, is this them, you know, Democrats trying to go after him? And are these just some gotcha prosecutors trying to take him down? Well, it turns out these investigations have been going on for years. And in fact, many of them even predate his presidency. And it all comes down to taxes, and we'll kind of break them down in a second. And I, you know, of course, if you think about it, we had the Mueller investigation, right? And my God, if you're thinking, oh, that was all, that was the only investigation. No, we have other ones. And I wish I could have those 2 years of my life back of the Mueller investigation. That's at the federal level. And we know at the federal level, the Department of Justice, Vice President-elect Joe Biden has said, I have no appetite. I don't think that it's smart for us to be investigating former presidents. So the question is, like, would Biden turn the guns of the Department of Justice on the former president? And the answer is no, he's not going to. Biden is not going to do that. He's going to look forward and he's going to start to focus on his presidency, and he's not going to want to have his new attorney general firing at former President Trump. It's not going to happen. Okay, but that's just the Department of Justice, because you also have the states, and the states are where all the action is. So there are two separate ongoing investigations right now at the state level, and Biden has no jurisdiction over them. So even if Biden says, I don't want to be touching him, I don't want to have anything to do with him, it doesn't matter. State prosecutors can still do what they need to do on the civil side and the criminal side. So you might be saying, why is he holding on to power so much? It's because right now there's immunity. We just don't prosecute current presidents. That's just the way it goes. And that's what sort of the roof that Mueller was dealing with is that, you know what? He's got immunity. I can't really do anything. If we're not going to prosecute him, then what am I doing? There's questions to whether or not he could pardon himself before he leaves office. That's still on the table. But then again, that would only be pardoning himself for federal crimes. Again, that leaves the states. So there's two different, I drew this up on my whiteboard today to help us understand this a little bit better, because it can be a little confusing, but I think it's incredibly important for us to understand, especially historically, from a business perspective, on how this could affect the next few years of the United States. So here we go. So here's President Trump at the top. And right now you have two separate investigations going on that we need to talk about. On the left here, you have Letitia James, New York State Attorney General Letitia James. And on the right, you have Sirius Vance Jr., the Manhattan District Attorney. So I think the more interesting line right now, the most striking of these two cases is the Vance case, which you may actually remember. It involves Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, and former adult film star Stormy Daniels, and how Michael Cohen would pay Daniels, you know, a large sum of money to keep quiet about having been with President Trump, right? We all know that. So there was campaign finance violations, et cetera, hush money payments, all of that. But it goes beyond that, because you might be saying, well, that might be enough, right? Well, it actually goes deeper. And this is where Sirius Vance is like seriously looking at the paper trail, which has grown a lot from looking into these hush money payments, it turns out. It turns out that these hush money payments started having him dig into the amount of money that he was raising from different loans and things from his business interests, and all comes down to his taxes. So it's all about the tax returns at this point. So if you are a good prosecutor, like in a criminal investigation, you need like the murder weapon, right? You need the fingerprints. The same is true of a white collar prosecutor who's looking at fraud, tax evasion, etc. He needs those tax returns. And drawing these lines between these different Trump hotels, how much money he's claiming they're worth, how much money he's bringing in or claiming he's bringing in, and then suddenly underreporting that on his taxes. So these are the real questions. He said, we need to get these tax returns. And now, of course, the Trump administration sued to have that stopped. President Trump sued to have that stopped. And let's go through so Trump sued to stop that from happening. Then he lost at the federal district court level. And then he lost at the appeals court level. And then he lost at the U.S. Supreme Court. So they said, no, you got to hand over these tax returns. Part of an investigation. Well, then Trump said, no, I want to appeal that. And he based it on this idea that those subpoenas initially were overly broad. So he took them back to the first court. They said, sorry, Trump. He kicked it up to the next court. They said, sorry, we agree with the form. No, done. Now it's waiting whether or not the U.S. Supreme Court is going to hear this. Now, if they don't hear it and the court says, no, we're done, we've already ruled on this, then this guy, Sirius Vance, gets to have access to these tax returns. He gets to start looking at these tax returns to try to draw these connections. And that could result in an indictment of the president or his business associates or his family members or his business. And all of that could happen. And we probably won't know, and Sirius Vance Jr. won't know exactly what he wants to do until he sees this evidence. But the point is that the reason he's pushing so vehemently to get these tax returns is because he believes that he has something here, something big, some kind of crime, and he wouldn't be going after it so vociferously if he didn't. And the idea really comes down to his business, his hotels, and what he was beginning to notice after the New York Times broke this story about Trump and his tax returns. And Michael Cohen corroborated this, okay, his former partner, that Trump, you know, is in a lot of trouble financially. And in order to get loans, would basically lift up and artificially inflate the value of his properties and how much money he was making from these properties in the form of tenant rent and so forth. Why would he do that? Well, he would do that so he could go and get loans. He was artificially inflating the values of his properties, allegedly. And he was artificially inflating the amount of income that he was receiving from these tenants. in these buildings? Well, one intrepid reporter went to one of his buildings in San Francisco from ProPublica and found out that the building was basically empty. There was no one there. And he was receiving large streams of cash from this property, allegedly. So why would he inflate the values to get loans, to get money? And then why would he put a lower value and a lower amount of rent on his taxes to not pay taxes? So on the one hand, he's inflating it. And on the other hand, he's deflating it. Well, as you know, that would be tax fraud if that's proven true. So that's on the one side. Question then was asked about whether or not he's been paying enough taxes in New York State. Here is Nick Ackerman. He's a prosecutor from Southern District of New York. And I thought his take on this was spot on. So listen to the former prosecutor who knows these waters well. He knows what tax evasion looks like. Listen to Aaron Burnett ask him this question specifically about President Trump and whether or not he could be prosecuted.
Nick, I want to start with you. You investigated Nixon's taxes. You see here hundreds of millions of dollars in debt, chronic losses. You say compared to Trump, Nixon was a, quote, rookie amateur. Wow. Why?
He really was. What Nixon did was essentially backdate one deed for a gift of papers to the United States government. He did that when Congress had eliminated that deduction. He basically created a phony deed. It looks like Trump has done a whole series of activities that could qualify as tax fraud, not tax avoidance. This is a very important distinction. The New York Times headline read Trump's tax avoidance. But there's a key difference with tax fraud. Tax avoidance is simply getting, taking the tax code and getting the most deductions you can get under the code that's perfectly legal. Tax fraud, however, is lying about what your income was, lying about what your deductions are. And there's a couple of items that just stand out in that report from the New York Times that really appear to go beyond tax avoidance. I mean, the most glaring one is this one on the consulting fees. Some $747,622 that the New York Times was able to tie into payments that went to Trump's daughter, Ivanka. There's no reason, legitimate reason, for her to get those consulting fees since she was being paid already as a Trump employee. The only possible reason for doing this was somehow to move money around so that it wouldn't be taxed to Donald Trump, but would in effect go on Ivanka Trump's tax return, who probably had certain losses that she could take against it. So in the end, the government gets $0.
But when you lay this out, I mean, I guess just a blunt question is, do you think Trump could end up going to jail if he is not reelected because of anything in here?
No question about it. And his daughter could go to jail, too. Tax evasion is a 5-year felony.
He laid it out pretty clearly. Now he's talking about some things we didn't even touch on here. And I only touched on just so far, really diving deep into the serious Vance Manhattan District Attorney piece of this. I want to look now, though, at the other side of this, because this is equally interesting to me. This is the Letitia James side of this. Of course, she is the attorney general. So the only reason we even know about her case is because of Eric Trump. So she wanted to subpoena Eric Trump based on their business dealings, who was running the family business at the time. And Eric Trump said, okay, I'll come testify. And then a few days later, he canceled. And he said, I'm not going to testify. This is all politically motivated to embarrass my dad. And I'm not going to be showing up. But you know, it's not, because no one even knew about it. It was kept under wraps. It was kept under seal. So there was no, it wasn't public. The only point, that's the point at which it became public, because she had to go to court, the attorney general, and said Eric Trump could not just duck his testimony. And a judge agreed and ordered Eric Trump to testify. But what's fascinating is that in the legal papers, we learned a whole bunch of things about this investigation, and that she wasn't just looking in New York, apparently. Apparently, it extended to Chicago, to California, a number of properties across the country that he was involved with, where Trump essentially overvalued properties and then was making contributions to charity based on those values. And then he undervalued them on other forms. So in order to make these payments here, he's raising them up and then lowering them over here. And in some places, apparently didn't even declare forgetting loans as income. Just like avoided that altogether, which you're supposed to do. So this would be a civil case on that side. And she has said that she is continuing that investigation. ProPublica, for example, who's done some great reporting on this, went to Trump's New York City property tax filings and found that they did not declare income and income streams for various tenants that were living there. But filings for those same buildings at the same time also showed that he was receiving income. So it's like on some forms he's reporting the income and on others he's not. So if you want to do like an apples to apples comparisons with banks and securities filings on the same property, like there's different results with the same property, different results. And I guess the truth then, of course, comes down to those tax, you know, the tax returns, like what was then done at the federal level. So, the fact that these bank loans don't match, all of this paperwork doesn't match. Something smells incredibly fishy here, and that's what they're trying to get to the bottom of. So that's the kind of thing that's sort of outright tax fraud, according to the prosecutors. And it's not complicated to prosecute. Like, it's on one form you're saying this, then you're telling us over here this other thing. It's pretty easy to, as the prosecutors have said, it's pretty easy to figure out and it's pretty easy to prosecute. Not only that, bank fraud and insurance fraud are also on the table. So bottom line is President Trump has never paid his debts and he's made a career off of getting other people to pay for it. Stiffing people on different loans. He goes into these things, makes huge mistakes. He buys all these golf courses, which haven't been profitable. And he, like banks, for instance, I mean, he stiffed a lot of banks on this and other investors. And he gets away with it. Even now, really, if you think about it, it's the taxpayer that's funding his lifestyle. So yesterday, over the weekend, he was supposed to be on this G20 meeting. He was basically tweeting the whole time. He skipped out and went and go play golf. Like, just, you know, he's checked out, not doing his work. So the reason I believe that he wants to hold on to power, yes, we can all talk about this sort of media empire that he wants to create, right? The old Trump television thing. That's fine. And that might be his second game plan here. You know, that's when he leaves the White House, that's what he's going to do to raise money and elevate himself. But I think he loves the shield of the immunity right now. And that's why he's fighting so vociferously to try to win some of these recounts. You know, Georgia has already certified, right? They're already done. They've already done their recount. Like, it's done. Now he wants to do it a third time. It's going to shell out another $8 million of campaign contributions to go and fight this thing again? Because he knows what's coming. Because the day that he leaves the White House, he loses that immunity. And Biden gets it. It's like a handing over of immunity. And now he'll be open to all sorts of prosecutions based on his business dealings. And if you think about it, how much he's already in debt, I mean, we know that he's got about $400 and $500 million coming due in the next few months. So he gets out, he's got all of these loans, these balloon payment loans that are due in the next few months. Yeah, I'd want to stay in the White House if I had that. Let me know in the comments what you think about this. Do you think this is going to happen? Do you think justice will be served in this case? Or will they try to play it as just a political witch hunt and it'll get buried somehow? It'll be interesting to watch. I'd love to hear your thoughts about it. We got any good comments on that?
Somebody said that Trump didn't take his salary as the president. So I guess that washes it all away.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you don't take your, but you live for free, right? So he's still got income coming in apparently from his hotels and everything else, but he lives for free. He has the entire government, taxpayers taking care of him every day. Food, airline flights.
He could do a new show on his new network, Orange is the New Orange.
Orange is the New Orange. You know, I think it's interesting, though, to see it like laid out like this. And you see, you know, because we can get so lost in these details. I try to make it easy for everyone. You know, because you have Eric, the only reason we know about this is because Eric Trump over here, you know, because if he actually would have testified, this whole thing would have been kept under wraps. We wouldn't even known that she's looking at him for tax fraud. But all these hush money payments, that's where it all started here. You know, that's where, because of these payments to keep her quiet. And then they start looking into like, well, why were you using campaign money? Is campaign money being used to pay this off to keep her quiet? And start looking into all sorts of other things. And that's that paper trail that he's trying to get answers to right now. So there you go. We got more to get to today on the show.
Really quick, somebody wants to know if you saw the clip of AOC going off on Mitch on Friday about sending the Senate home. They said it was really good.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, we'll see if we can pull that up a little bit later. It was good. But I think there's, I think there can be some sanctimony in some of that stuff too, don't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Playing for the cameras, but there it goes. All right, I want to talk about student loan debt and why I believe we should wipe the whole thing away. Clean slate. Now, I know this is kind of, people get angry at me on some sides, and that's fine. But I want to go through this argument a little bit, because as you know, if you watch my show for any length of time, I think that student loan debt is just an albatross around our young generations' necks, and it really inhibits them from ever getting ahead. The fact that they're, want to become a social worker or work in a job that's not going to pay a lot, but it's going to be very meaningful to society, maybe helping other people get jobs or working with children with, developmental issues when they're young. And these people are, having to get expensive degrees in order for them to help children with disabilities. I mean, that's the kind of degree I'm talking about here. It's not going to be incredibly lucrative, but they're doing it from their heart and because they want to help children, right? And so now they're $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in debt or even more if they're getting their master's, so that they can be like a specialist that helps children with disabilities, and you're $100,000 in debt. And there's no way that they're going to be able to claw themselves out of this. So my thought is that in other countries, we need free public college. I mean, it's time. We need free public college in this country. And we're only talking about the people that can basically try to afford to go to college. There are just so many Americans that just say, it's not even on the table for me. I can't afford it. I'm not going to get a scholarship. And I can't afford even the small amount of loans. So I'm not going. I'm just not going to go. I'm not going to add those skills to my, to my repertoire and try to, get my family out of this by going to college. I'm just not going to do it because I can't afford it. So there is on the table right now a few options to try to wipe away student loans. So Bernie Sanders has called for us to wipe away student loans altogether. Get rid of it. We need to do it. Take it on. Get rid of it top to bottom. Chuck Schumer has also come out. So this is the thing with Bernie Sanders' proposal, which is to cancel all student loan debt. He doesn't think that the student loan debt should exist because he doesn't think that higher education should be considered a commodity. He says that no one should be saddled with debt for a service that should be paid for by progressive taxation and made free at the point of service. I agree with that 100%. Just look at Europe. Look at other, look at other countries that do this, where for very little amount of money, basically free for kids to go to university. And they're specialized. So they're not wasting a year redoing what they did in high school, spending that whole first year taking classes just so they can redo what they learned in high school. What a waste of time, which is what I did. I don't know about you, but for the first like year and a half at the University of Pittsburgh, all I ended up doing was the same classes that I'd just done in my junior and senior year of high school. Like statistics classes. And it was basically just repeats of what I just had in high school. It's like, well, why? That's a wasted year. You took a par course? What is that? Oh, where you like run around,
jump off buildings.
Equipment that's around the park.
How is that a class? Like a pull-up machine? Yeah. Hey. Yeah, and it was like University of California, right? Cal State. here, Cal State, here's $10,000. Let me learn how to use a pull-up bar, a balance beam. You know, my four-year-old learns that at recess. It's ridiculous. I took history of folk tales at the University of Pittsburgh just to fulfill a credit that I had to. History of folk tales.
I bet that came in handy with the guitar, though.
I guess, yeah. All my I play Hansel and Gretel songs to my kids at night. History of folk tales. My folk tales book was that thick, by the way. And bless that teacher's heart. Like, that's what that teacher wanted to study, is folk tales. You know, okay. So I had to take that. I had no desire to learn anything about folk tales, but that's what you get. You know, in a specialized college in Europe, like, kids are going there because they want to learn a certain thing. Like, they're not going there like, oh, I don't know what I want, but it's just fun to be here at college. You know, I'm going to try out all of these things. No, you take a year off and you figure out what you want to do. And then you go to study that thing. I know it's such a novel concept, but in the United States, we're saddled with this thing. And these universities are making hand over fist. And these kids are saddled with this debt for years to come. And it's crushing them. It's not to mention the fact that we're in a pandemic and now they can't get jobs to even try to pay it off. And those student loan bills are coming due right after Christmas. So now all of these kids are going to be saddled with these student loans, an entire generation basically set backwards because of student loan debt. So that's Bernie Sanders' philosophy. New York Senator Chuck Schumer, I was stunned by this a few weeks ago when he came out. And he's not really, you know, he's no Bernie Democrat. If anything, he's more like Joe Biden than you'd think, right? He came out and said, we need to wipe away $50,000 in student loan debt. And immediately everyone jumped on board of that. Even the Biden camp got behind it in part. So on day one, without Mitch McConnell, we could wipe away $50,000 in student loan debt with a stroke of a pen. Well, leave it to big business and big money starting to slowly seep its way even more obviously into the Biden camp. Biden transition team. The Biden team basically walked that back from 50,000 and said, you know, we like that $10,000 number that was floated a few months ago in the HEROES Act. 10,000 sounds like a good number. So you go from Bernie Sanders, progressive, wipe away all student loan debt, to Chuck Schumer, not progressive, $50,000 in student loan debt. Now down to Biden, $10,000 in student loan debt. And everyone wants to call him a socialist? And a progressive, again, paid for with progressive taxes. That's how you get there. It's not, we're not throwing around the word progressive for no reason. That's Bernie Sanders' platform, right? To pay for this with progressive taxation. And by the way, ending foreign wars.
So what you're saying is people will probably end up with like a $1,200 check.
Right. Yeah, by the time it's all said and done, it'll be like, here's $1,200 for two of your student loan payments. Good for you. And by the way, then there won't be another separate stimulus check. They'll be like, here, you can use it one way or the other.
Yeah. So I gave you $1,200, so leave us alone.
Yeah, it'll be this in gas gift cards instead. It's not even going to be cash. They'll be like, here's $1,200 for Sheets gasoline gift cards or BP gift cards. So, look, it's a good argument. So $10,000, yes, it would be something. But it's all the more reason when you start going from all student loan debt, wipe it away with the stroke of a pen, to $50,000 to $10,000. What you're going to end up finding is that at the end of the rope, at the end of it, Biden's going to wish he would have canceled everything. If he only cancels $10,000, what you're going to find is that it's, okay, it's going to help a little bit. But what's the logic for just pulling $10,000 out of a hat? How does that help anybody?
Well, and think about what that's going to do. If they do decide to do 10,000 and then people get upset, mm-hmm. and they protest that, and then like, how hard would it be at that point to go back and do 50 because you've already done 10. So it's like it convolutes it then to make it more in the future. So it's like out of the gate, it has to be a big number.
Go big or go home. And by the way, he can do it without Mitch. He can do it without McConnell. He can do it without, it doesn't matter, these Georgia runoff seats. So you're right that it'd be totally convoluted to do the smallest, go big or go home. Don't start with 10. Do it all. So now there's a couple of arguments, of course, that emerge in this whole debate. I'm sure you can imagine. It's the idea of the freeloader argument, right? And there's two sort of unfairness arguments that have emerged. This idea that this debt would be regressive, that canceling the debt would be regressive, and that this would also create what I've seen written as a moral hazard. So let's try to understand these a little bit. The regressiveness objection is that this population of borrowers that took out these student loans is richer on average than the larger population of non-borrowers. So it's a regressive, you know, it's basically a regressive tax. So we're really helping the wealthier kids pay this off. And then there's the moral hazard argument, which is saying that you would have to, that basically a student loan would now give students in the future this fear of maybe taking out student loans to finance their education, or they might take them out just on the whim and hoping. So it would actually like make them take out more because, oh, I guess the government's going to step in. It's almost like the big banks on Wall Street. Oh, we can continue to go back into doing all these crappy mortgage-backed securities. You know why? Because the Fed's going to step in and take care of us. So who cares, right? We can just do it. We don't, because we have this like safety net. So maybe all these kids in the future will take out even more loans because, you know what? We just know that the federal government will step in and wipe them away. So I'm just going to do it anyway. So it sets us up for a potential failure and not just like a pandemic situation. So those are, you know, those are two of the big underlying pieces of this. But these arguments about this sort of fairness and restitution doesn't make any sense because, you know, let's think of this as like a killer has running rampant in your neighborhood, right? And there are people, and you can't stop this killer. And this killer being, let's be honest, student loan debt in these universities that are like, you know, destroying our a generation of young people. So this killer is running rampant in the neighborhood. And this killer has like hurt some people, right? It's like stabbed a few people and like, and still managed to get away and killed some people in its wake. And finally, we all get clearer heads and we're able to get all of our intentions together and stop this killer. We're like, we're done. We're done with this killer. And then you feel badly. Should you feel badly about the people that got like a few nicks on their hand and like stabbed? Like, couldn't we have done more to help those people? It's possible. Can we look back and say, well, what are we going to do about the people who died in this fight? Like in this war against this killer, you know? Okay. So is that what we're really arguing here? Is that like me, I paid off my student loans. So what? We shouldn't stop this killer because Clayton paid off his student loans years ago? I don't know. I think this doesn't hold water to me. You know, money can't make up for that. Like I've paid them off and now I'm working and I'm doing well. What, should I get a big check from the federal government because I paid off my student loans? It wasn't in place then. I have to live with that, right? I mean, it's like asking people to be able to go back and vote in elections before they were able to vote under the Constitution. You know, once you go back five elections now and vote, because now finally men got their head out of their butts and actually gave women the right to vote, you know? I mean, so I just don't think that argument holds any water. Like, I get the idea that, oh, well, so now we're just going to reward freeloaders. And they're not freeloaders. They worked hard and went to university and hit a pandemic and are trying to get ahead in this world by getting a job, but there's no jobs. So they're stuck at home living with their parents. And they're saddled with enormous student loan debt that they're never going to be able to get out from under. It's a draconian system that I just think needs to be eliminated. I just don't think that either of these options, either of these reasons is a good enough reason for us not to cancel this debt right now. And by the way, I'm also on board with canceling that credit card debt that people have accrued under this pandemic. These people who are under enormous debt right now, who've just been using credit cards to pay for the food on their table because the federal government has crapped the bed and can't do anything about it. So these people have run their credit scores down into the 500s. They can't afford to pay. They don't have a job. And so they're living off their credit cards right now. I mean, how many of you watching right now are living off your credit cards? I've seen many of you tell me in the chat that you know, your credit score went from 700 to 500. You haven't been able to pay your bills, and you're just living off your credit cards right now. I've seen that. And I think this would open up, it's an opportunity for us to say, look, free public college, it opens up an entire world of education to people who heretofore have never been able to go to college. And wiping the slate clean would really help kickstart and restart all of these people's lives. I've seen so many comments from you who've written to me say, this would be a game changer. Like, my life would be changed dramatically if I wasn't saddled with this $50,000 in student loan debt. What do you think about it? Let me know your thoughts. I would say that, I think President-elect Biden needs to go bigger than this $10,000 idea. And I think even, quite honestly, I think even better than Chuck Schumer's $50,000, I want to be in that Bernie Sanders eliminate student loan debt altogether camp and start to put in place a free public college for all. Let me know your thoughts on this. I would love to hear your comments below. Don't forget to smash that like button and subscribe to the channel while you're down there leaving your comments, because I read all of your comments.
Well, and I got some comments here, people saying, you know, like, you have to make a hard decision. Like, a lot of kids end up not going to college because they know that they can't afford it, you know. And so you have people that potentially would go and better their life, but they can't because of the debt that it would put on them. Not everybody gets into college.
Right. And so, this, you cannot just wipe away the student loan debt without changing the fundamental underlying problem here, which is that we need to have free public college. Because if you're just going to wipe away the loans and then like let people start accruing all these loans again, like we get like 1 year gimme, like a mulligan for 1 year, that's not good enough. What I'm saying is wipe the slate clean. It didn't work. The proof is in the pudding. Okay. It did not work. Experiment is over. Our kids are not going to be saddled with this type of debt anymore. Now, if their parents want to send them some fancy institution, fine. And they want to pay for it, fine. But now we will have a baseline of free public college with great free public college across the United States paid for. So anybody can go to college and get a leg up and not have to be worried about how am I going to ever pay for this? I can't pay for this. You know, I'm trying to take care of my mom right now and I can't, there's no way I can go to college. It's not going to happen. And so look to Europe. Look at these other countries that do it, where, by the way, their universities are excellent. And in fact, many cases, way better than American universities. And they're free. So we can do this. But you have to change that underlying foundation, I think, in order to make this, you know, in order to make this work. Just reading some of your comments here.
60,000 is better, or the total amount? Like, that's the thing. Like, it depends also how they do it, because are they going to do it as an income? You know what I mean? Like, will that count as income and be taxable if it's 50? I mean, I understand that $50,000 is still $50,000. Like, even if it ends up being 24 after taxes or whatever that would be, that's still going to help. But like, it also depends how they do this. Like, it should just be forgiven, period. End of story.
Yeah. It can't be, it wouldn't be considered income. No, there's no way. To wipe away a debt is to not, you know, you're not being given a check. It would just be wiped away. It would not be considered income, because then you're going to pay taxes on that. I mean, maybe that's how they could classify it. But then when you're filing your taxes, it would also be a forgivable tax. So I can't imagine.
And so does the government. So my question is, so does the government then compensate the colleges for those losses and stuff that they would have to pay for from that money that they had earmarked for, you know, things to keep the college running?
Yeah, what they would do is the same way that they would do this with the credit cards. At least in some of the proposals that I've read, would be the government would basically step in and pay those debts. They would handle the debt burden in the same way that the Federal Reserve takes on trillions of dollars in debt to China to pay Wall Street. Here, they would basically be absorbing that debt burden, paying these colleges, wiping away that debt. So, you know, University of Tennessee or et cetera would get its bills paid by the federal government, not Johnny, who took out the student loans. They would be taken care of. You know, a lot of these student loans are government student loans anyway. So they're government-backed student loans. So they would be, you know, they already have a lot of that information ready to go, and they could wipe that away pretty quickly. Same thing is true of the credit cards. If they did the credit card way, which would be to wipe away the credit cards, you know, Chase, JP Morgan, et cetera, they'd love this, because they'd get all that money. And, you know, look, this is the Federal Reserve is already primed to be able to do something like that, to sort of wipe that slate clean.
Well, then
wipe
hopefully
that slate clean, but then also not give them the credit cards again. You know what I mean? Like, okay, it's wiped away and that credit card is now closed. You're done.
Well, and hopefully it wouldn't turn out like then the colleges all of a sudden become like the insurance companies. Like, oh, well, the government's paying for the college. What's tuition going to be? Let's jack that up another 20 grand.
Well, that's where, you know, that's fine. If they want to jack up their prices and mom and dad want to pay $100,000 a year for little Johnny to go to University of Nebraska just so he can wear like a red hat and feel good about his Cornhuskers, great. But then there's also a free public college option on the table that's just as good, if not better, than going to the University of Nebraska. And they're going to go there for free and get a great education. And it's going to, you know, so unless dad's that much of like an, you know, a Cornhuskers fan, like wants his son to go there, he wants him to wear that red hat. It's going to be, you know, it'll be one of those elite things. But we've seen how those don't matter anymore. You know, the value of this like elite education is not showing itself anymore. That ship has sailed. The fact that you've got Google and others hiring people, and actually they're actually looking, if you've spent 4 years at a university, in some ways they're looking at that as a negative. Like, why did you waste 4 years? Like, what were you doing for 4 years? And what did you accomplish in those 4 years? Anything meaningful? So to get hired at Google and a whole lot of other Silicon Valley companies right now, they're wanting to see what you've done in that 4 years. Did you build something? Did you try to start a business? Did you, you know, that's more valuable to them than did you go to Harvard on daddy's dollar? I get in a lot of trouble when I say this. People do not like when I say we should get rid of college. We should get rid of the assist, you know. Because people just don't go. They just go because they think they have to, and they don't know what the return on investment is for going. So they just go and they waste 4 years, and then they're hugely in debt, and then they don't even end up doing the job, or they don't even end up using the degree they got.
Yeah, my best friend went to college for COBOL and I can't remember the other programming language, and by the time he got done, it was almost obsolete. And so now it's like he does sales, like it's completely different than his whole education, and he's still paying for it, and he's almost 50 years old.
Oh,
because he went to Holy Cross up by Notre Dame.
Well, yeah, you're paying so ridiculous. How many people watching right now have a lot of student loan debt? And are you even using that student loan? Like, are you using that degree? Let me know in the chat. I'd love to hear that.
Well, and do you know, are they talking like that would only apply to government loaned? Or are they talking, you know what I mean, in the any of the conversations? Have they mentioned that?
Well, there's student, you mean like to like Stafford loans or those types of things?
Yeah.
So there are, let me see what the latest on this Biden one is, but the Biden proposal, let me see here. I have it in front of me. Where is that?
John Shanks, I have 54,000 in student loan debt and can't even use my business administration degree.
Ugh. Yeah. So, yeah, what Biden is saying is, well, right now, what Biden is saying is up to $10,000 would be canceled under a Biden plan, but only private, non-federal student loans is being talked about from the Biden $10,000 plan. So private, non-federal. Okay, well, then what about the federal? And then there's this idea of it's going to be means tested also. So
that like, never goes well.
That it would be for no. So then who's economically distressed? You know, who's we're going to get rid of student loan debt immediately. But for those who are economically distressed borrowers, well, what does that mean? And how do you justify that? Like, what metrics are you using to justify means, you know, this means testing? So don't do that. Don't do it when you get into this kind of crap. I want to know, like, what lobbyists are telling him not to do the larger Schumer plan. You know, what big businesses, is the big universities are saying, don't do this. It sets a dangerous precedent. You're going to ruin our business model. I don't know. Clearly, I mean, when you see something like this, clearly money is involved. Clearly someone has his ear telling him not to go big on this. And those people surrounding him that are, you know, that are going to be in his cabinet already telling him this, you can't do this. That's too progressive. You can't do that. Yeah. Listen to big money over the American worker or over the, you know, students who are being saddled with this. So there's something big that Vice President-elect Biden can do again on day one when he takes office, and that is give workers more power, better wages, and take care of the American worker. So throughout the summer, we've been talking here on the show about how would a Vice President Biden, as president, run the labor game? Would he be a union guy? Would he support strong unions? Will he support the American worker? Well, last week, you know, he met with those labor leaders and the business leaders virtually over Zoom. And he came out to the podium and he said a couple of interesting things. He said, number one, this is the one that I brought up immediately because we watched it live, if you watched our breaking news that day. He said, I'm a union guy. And he said, I said this on the phone to these guys when I was talking to them. I said, unions are going to have increased power under a Biden administration. To which they said, great, he said. These union leaders were saying, and these labor and these business leaders were saying, that's great. We're all for that. Wonderful. Which I was a little dubious on. Do businesses want stronger workers? Not often, but okay. Strong unions, strong labor in this country is the backbone of this country, by the way. So he wants increased power. Okay. He went on to say a few other things that day. Listen.
Necessary resources. And for millions of Americans who've lost hours and wages or have lost their jobs, we all agreed on our call that we can deliver immediate relief and it need be done quickly. Affordable health care for millions of people who have lost it or are in danger of losing it. Child care, sick leave, family leave, so workers don't have to choose between work and family. Corporate America agreed on this today. The folks on the call. We need support of small to support small businesses and entrepreneurs that are the backbone of our communities, but are teetering on the edge. And we all agreed on the urgent need for funding for states and localities to keep frontline workers and essential workers on the job.
So what things could he champion on day one to really show us that, yes, he supports the worker? Now, remember, there were a lot of reluctant voters because we saw the exit polls. There were a lot of, you know, hey, I'm going to vote for Biden and I'm going to get John over here who works at the mill with me to vote for Biden and Harris because, you know, I think he's more of a champion of the worker than Trump. So there's a lot of convincing going on. And he did well in that regard. So he has to put his money where his mouth is for these union folks that came out and threw their support behind him in a way that they didn't for Hillary, by the way. So now he's really got to pony up and do this. Otherwise, the Republican Party is really trying to grab that place. They're really trying to be the party of the low wage worker. They're trying to be the party of the working class voter. That's what Senator Marco Rubio said last week. So this is in play right now. So Biden has a lot of opportunities, and on day one, he has an opportunity to come in and through executive action, not even having to wait for Mitch McConnell to sign a series of executive orders for the American worker. So let's go through a couple of these here. So right on day one, he could come in and force businesses to implement protections for COVID-19 for their workers. I know that wouldn't make Mitch McConnell very happy because he wants limitations for your ability to tell your company what to do or to sue them if they don't put in proper liability protections or protections for workers through PPE or other things inside the building. So immediately be able to implement protections from COVID-19 for the workers, require government contractors to pay a minimum $15 minimum wage. He doesn't need any congressional support for federal workers. So federal employees, $15 minimum wage right out of the gate, and much, much more. Again, he wouldn't need Senate Majority Mitch McConnell at all in this. He could do so many things right away that wouldn't have to involve the Senate at all. Look, labor unions just spent $180 million supporting Biden. and they don't have the money. So these labor unions threw $180 million behind Biden to help him get elected. And they tried to help Democrats up and down the ticket, up and down the ballot, hoping that this would be the party that would stand for the worker, which I don't know. Democrats have abandoned the worker over the past few years. They have big money, big business, and Wall Street in mind rather than the worker. So will this be sort of a reckoning for these Democrats now to say, well, I guess, you know, they gave us a lot of money. I guess we probably should support them. Democratic Party is increasingly focused on these suburban professionals. So higher wage, you know, higher wage workers, rather than its working class base. You know, they've been focusing more on the making $150,000 crowd, you know, the limo liberal crowd. That's what they've been focusing on, the Hollywood elite. And they want to wonder why they've been losing. It's because they've been focusing on wealthier people. And they haven't been focusing on the workers that got them there in the first place. They've basically abandoned that. You know, this is the thing that I think a lot of these workers have been so skeptical about Biden around. They've seen all of this money pouring into Biden. And they're wondering, you know, is this the ticket? Is this best for working class people? And I think, you know, David, you've heard me say it. We've been saying it here on the show. I don't believe it is. I don't believe the Democrats are the party of the working class person. I think they lie and pretend to be the party of the working class person. They try to take them, you know, take them for granted, like Hillary Clinton did. Oh, yeah, all the Rust Belt people up here in Pennsylvania and Scranton and Ohio and West Virginia, they're all going to vote for me because you'd be crazy not to, right? And that's basically what she said. And here Trump came in and said, you know what? I'm going to put on tariffs to protect American steel. I'm going to get these plants reopened. And in some cases it worked, in other cases it didn't. Other cases it was terrible for the American farmers and others. But hey, it seemed like he had their back in a way that Hillary Clinton was out of touch. So they've really got to start putting things in place here. So there's one thing called the PRO Act right now, which is on the table, and the Protecting the Right to Organize Act. That this is one of the top priorities for labor right now. They want the Senate, they want the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, to push this through. So this will be a really telling moment. Does President Biden sign the PRO Act? Will it pass? Will it get through a Senate? What it does is it would allow people to organize. It's an expansion of labor rights. It would make it easier for workers to join unions. It would make employers face real consequences for violating labor laws. It would weaken the so-called right-to-work state laws. And it would also constitute the most significant labor victory since labor's great defeat with the passage of the anti-union Taft-Hartley Act in 1947. So this would be a return to strengthening the American worker and the American union in this country. And then guess what? If you don't think that this is important, or you don't think that unions are strong, when unions organize, they have a voice. And then it makes big money. It makes big Wall Street have to pay attention to, make them pay attention to the workers, to the average person. This is how it works. When you join forces, you know, you might not have all the money, but when you can come together politically and you can force their hand, this is how change happens. It's what happened in the early 1900s. All you need to do is go back and read an Upton Sinclair novel or a book to see how unions changed America. So right now, as Celine McNichols, director of the Government Affairs of the Economic Policy Institute, says, which is a liberal D.C. think tank, says right now workers want unions. They're not getting them. That's because the process is so rigged against working people. By the way, most Republicans want unions. Republicans want strong unions. Ask, you know, a Republican worker in Ohio at the Carrier factory or other places, do you want unions? Do you want stronger labor laws so you don't have to work ridiculous hours with less pay, so your family's taken care of? Yes, they do. Republicans want it too. So there's a lot that President Biden could do, enacting a $15 minimum wage, like right out of the gate, workplace safety, civil rights issues, right out of the gate without having to use Mitch McConnell. So again, if you want to, if we want to push President Biden on this, you know, go to change.org. There's a number of petitions there that are, and a lot of them signed by labor leaders who want stronger workplace rights. Go there and sign it. If you're a worker that wants this, go there and sign it. Again, I'll have a link to change.org in the show notes. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Are you in support of strong labor? And do you want to hold President-elect Biden's feet to the fire on this to make sure that this happens? We have him on tape saying it, and we'll keep watching to see in the first year here if this unfolds. Much love to all of you for subscribing and becoming a part of our great community here. By the way, I should mention, if you want to become a channel member to support independent journalism, you can do that. It's just for like the price of a cup of coffee once a month. You can support this show. We do this show every day, 9 a.m. Eastern time. You can just go to morninginvest.com/join, become a channel member. We have two new members today. Oh, we have six new members.
Six new members, yeah.
Awesome. Six new members today. Thank you so much. Who just joined? We just had Tracy Reed just joined. Who else just joined? James Tiramaco? Am I saying that right, James? Just became a member. Tiramaso or Tiramaco? Judy Hunter Roberts became a new bronze level member of the channel. Sandra Hamilton also. Tracy Reed. Did I get all of them or did I miss? They go by and I don't see them. If I missed any, let me know.
I think you got them. I couldn't bring up I can't bring up comments today. I couldn't get the YouTube log, wouldn't log me in. We just got two more, Joseph Garcia and Firefox.
Oh, Firefox. You got to do the voice, though.
Oh.
I think people demand the voice.
Welcome, member Firefox, and Andrew Martin, and Joseph Garcia. That's right. Monday.
It is Monday.
It is.
Oh, boy. Let's see if I had something else I wanted to show you here.
Andrew said, worth the voice. Do the voice for me. Okay.
Carla Becker.
So I had a chance to play some golf. So here I was the other day on Saturday playing.
Did you play with Trump?
No, I did not play with Trump. No, but you know what I love? People say who play with him, like, man, he cheats all the time. Like, you know, like ball that should be out of bounds, like kicks it in from out of bounds, or you know, just uses another ball when it's out of bounds and doesn't take a penalty stroke. I mean, it's just
Could you imagine playing golf with him? Like, the guys are probably like, yeah, he's picking up his ball again. And like, they're just like pretending like they don't know. It's okay, Mr. Trump. Like, just that guy's ass is kissed probably 24/7 just to keep him from having a meltdown. We got to keep him off Twitter.
Yeah.
Tell him he's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're surrounded by sycophants. Like, who's going to tell you no? You know, just like, hey, great job today, Mr. Trump. You did so good today. Yeah, I did. I did. I really did. I think I hit like a 75. And everyone's like, no, he didn't. He hit like a 95. But sure, you did great today.
It's like, you ever see the Big Lebowski?
Sure you did.
Mark at zero. You were over the line. Mark at zero. this is a good name.
I haven't played.
Thanks for subscribing, Busta Goblin.
Busted Goblin. Yeah.
Busta Goblin. I like that. Thank you for becoming a channel member. Oh, I was just gonna say, I hadn't played in my son and daughter started doing like the junior PGA thing in Pennsylvania, and so that's where I started getting really into it again. I used to play all the time as a kid playing golf and just around my neighborhood in Pennsylvania with my friends down at the really crappy par 3 golf course down the street from us, it was, you know, every hole was like half flooded all the time, but it was so much fun. And I didn't play for a long time as I was starting my company and working mornings, and I just didn't. And then my son started getting really into it and doing the junior PGA thing. And now it just got me back into it. Now I've been playing more and more.
Somebody asked, what was your score?
Playing golf in a row.
What was your best score?
Well, I have a 28 handicap right now, which I'm working on. So these were some big par five courses that we played, three of them side by side as like a little guys retreat weekend. So, with a 28 handicap, and then we did like a Ryder Cup kind of style. So we did like a match play on Sunday. We did a scramble on Friday. Yeah. So I don't know exactly what my overall score was. It was okay. I had some pars in there. Some really nice drives, had some really nice chips overall. I played crappy on Saturday morning. My front nine was terrible. My back nine was really solid. So for not playing a lot, it felt good. It was good to just get out, get away from the computer for a little while, get away from work, and get some fresh air. So it was good. So thank you all for tuning in on Friday. Thank you all for tuning in this morning. We are back.
Oh, people are asking, are you going to do a show on Thursday on Thanksgiving?
Let me ask my wife.
Okay. Here, let's play some.
Yes.
Okay, yes.
Yes. Yes, I will. I will do a show on Thanksgiving. If you guys will be here, I will do a show on Thanksgiving. Only if you smash that like button. Get me up to like, I don't know. We have 1,000 likes right now. If you can get up to 5,000 likes, then I will do a show on Thanksgiving. How about that? And all of you subscribe. That'll make me, and I'll do it. All right? I'll do a Thanksgiving show.
And everybody wants Natalie back for Friday, so.
Not going to happen. Just kidding. No. I might, see, she's too all over the place. Because she'd be like, oh, I can't today because I'm going to go do this thing and I'm doing this thing. And so, you know, it's hard enough. It's hard enough having one of the parents being able to have a consistent schedule with three kids, you know. All right. Much love to all of you. Thanks, everyone. I got to run to a meeting. Thanks for the comments on the Christmas tree. My kids will be thrilled that you were happy that they set up the nice Christmas tree.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't mind if you kept it up all year round.
Yeah, I know. Because they hope the presents would keep showing up. That's right. All right, thanks, David. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Bye now.